Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today we welcome Dr. Yaron Sternbach, a vascular surgeon with St. Peter's Vascular Associates. Dr. Sternbach specializes in minimally invasive and endovascular procedures for the entire scope of vascular disorders. He's a grad of McGill University Faculty of Medicine. He completed a residency at Tufts New England Medical Center, completed fellowships at Lehigh Clinical Medical Center, Southern Illinois University, and Johns Hopkins. Give us a call at 800-348-2551 if you have a question. 800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org as we roll along here. voxpop@wamc.org or 800-348-2551. Dr. Yaron Sternbach, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Tell us briefly, just give us a 101 level summary of what the vascular system is, what it does, and what you don't know about it.
Well, listen, there's probably a lot I don't know about it, but let me tell you a little bit about what it does. Vascular surgeons really work with transportation of blood to all organs in the body. And so that includes arteries and veins. The arteries go from the heart to the various organs, and the veins return the blood to the heart. And so aside from the coronary arteries, which we leave to the cardiac surgeons, we're really involved in every aspect of that.
So I understand how blood can be pumped out to various parts of the body from the heart. The veins I find interesting. Do they require muscles to get the blood back? Do they get tired? Do they age?
So every part of us ages. Oh, yeah. But
tell me about it.
You know, the way they function is that they have pressure gradients that get them back to get the blood's flow back to the heart.
What do you mean a pressure gradient?
So they're just different pressures in different parts of the body, and those changes in pressure are really part of what happens to drive venous return back. Part of that change in pressure is something like muscular contraction, for instance, in your legs, where every time you contract a muscle, that generates pressure around the veins and it pushes things back. The other kind of fun part of venous return, if you will, is that there are valves in the veins that help transport blood in spite of gravity up against gravity.
Interesting. We are joined today by Dr. Yaron Sternbach, a vascular surgeon with St. Peter's Vascular Associates. The number is 800-348-2551. Before we started the show, you said there's some new tech you guys have been looking at and working with. Tell us about that.
So it's a rapidly evolving field. Vascular surgery is on a variety of sides. But in terms of aneurysms, we've recently introduced minimally invasive branched aneurysm repairs. That's allowed us to expand the repertoire of aneurysms that we repair in this minimally invasive technique to involve major branches in the visceral aorta, includes branches to the intestines, the liver, and both kidneys. So previously, these were more limited repairs for segments of the aorta. Now we can essentially do almost the whole aorta.
For those who are not familiar, or maybe they haven't had one yet or ever, hopefully, what's an aneurysm? How does it work? And then how do you provide a repair?
Yeah, so an aneurysm is a situation where the walls of the blood vessel, most often the aorta, weaken. And instead of having a straight tube, for those that are familiar with plumbing, yeah, you end up with something that looks a little bit like an onion or a balloon, and it really follows the same basic rules of physics that a balloon does. And the larger it gets, the greater the risk of rupture and bleeding. And so we're very focused on trying to identify and prevent such situations.
Now, you said aorta. Maybe I have it wrong, but I thought vascular surgeons didn't really touch the heart.
Yeah, it's important to discriminate. So the heart is separate from the aorta. The aorta originates right above the heart, comes out of the aortic valve, and it's up in your chest. It makes a big U-turn at the top part of your chest and then runs down the length of your body towards your essentially your belly button, where it and all along that course, it gives off branches to a variety of organs. Once it gets into your lower abdomen, around your belly button, it splits into the main arteries to each leg, the iliac arteries. And that's how blood gets transported down there.
We are joined today by Dr. Yaron Sternbach of St. Peter's Vascular Associates. The number here is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. So you mentioned aneurysms. What is the most, not popular, but what do you do most in the course of your work week?
The most common things that we deal with are blockages in the arteries. You know, so we call it occlusive disease, and it can affect any organ system. Most frequently, we see it affect people's legs and people's carotid arteries. And those are the groups of procedures that we do most frequently.
And what do you do?
Yeah, so it depends on what the patient's symptoms are, if they have any symptoms at all, if it's appropriate to do these procedures. But we'll do anything from opening up these blood vessels from within with these minimally invasive endovascular solutions to occasionally cleaning them out, what we would call an endarterectomy.
Right. How do you do it? Is it like a Roto-Rooter?
Well, when we're doing it from within the vessel, it can be something like a Roto-Rooter, but sometimes it's breaking up the plaque with ultrasound-guided balloon angioplasty or just regular balloon angioplasty, literally blowing up a balloon within the blood vessel and fracturing the plaque to open it up further. And sometimes we'll use stents to really keep the plaque up against the wall of the artery, and that's, if you will, like a medical-grade chain-link fence.
Yeah. How long do they last?
A lifetime, hopefully.
Which could be
not
brief.
Always.
It could
right.
be brief.
Well, hopefully not, right?
Now, if this plaque gets loose, that could be trouble, right?
Plaque getting loose is usually trouble, yeah.
And how do you guard against that when you're doing the Roto-Rooter technique?
So there are a variety of ways of guarding against that, depending on where we're working. Sometimes it's just as simple as thinning the blood in order to make it work. There are also baskets that we can use to catch plaque. When we do carotid stents, for instance, we will actually reverse the flow in the carotid artery and take it out of the body, filter all the blood, and then give it back in through a venous cannula. So
that's amazing. Dr. Yaron Sternbach is our guest today. One email here. And listen, doctor, I mean, a lot of us are unsure which specialty we're going to ask questions about. So if something is outside of your realm, feel free to say it. Rick writes in, I'm a 59-year-old male. I exercise regularly and in good shape. I'm not on any meds. Should I be concerned? My pulse rate is consistently in the 55 to 58 range. Blood pressure is 130 over 70.
So overall, Rick sounds like he's doing really well. I mean, you know, the pulse rate by itself is not a concern. It's actually within the low normal range and, you know, probably a reasonable thing to see in someone who exercises regularly is in good shape. You know, blood pressure that he mentioned is also pretty reasonable, and blood pressure is really important to talk about because blood pressure control is something that can't be overemphasized in, you know, in our society at this point.
At the beginning of the show, I said, well, what don't you know? What is the one thing, the most important thing that vascular surgery cannot do yet that you'd like to see happen?
Well, I think if we were able to predict when an aneurysm would rupture or when a plaque would rupture to become symptomatic, that would be incredibly valuable because we would be able to delay treatment and in some cases, forego treatment altogether if we knew a patient was not going to get in trouble with these things.
So what's stopping you guys from figuring that out? You said it's very much like a balloon and it follows physics and eventually the balloon pops. I mean, the thickness of the vessel, right?
Right. So all of that is true. But the problem is that everything we do is based on population-based data sets, right? So I can tell you that if you have an aneurysm that is 5.5 centimeters in diameter, which is really meets the criteria for repair under most circumstances, you know, that is likely to rupture, you know, perhaps 5 to 10% of the time within the next year. But if I knew that it was going to be 364 days from now as opposed to tomorrow, I could really tailor the timing of your intervention pretty carefully. And we have the same kinds of data sets that, you know, extend out over 3 and 5 year periods. So if you had a narrowing in your carotid artery and I knew that you weren't going to have a stroke for 4 years, that would be fantastic. I wouldn't have to deal with it now.
Is population-based research the only way that you can get your information?
It's not the only way, but it's probably the most widely applicable way and to get answers that you're trying to get to pretty quickly.
We're joined by Dr. Yaron Sternbach of St. Peter's Vascular Associates. Tell you what, Doc, we'll take a quick break here for some underwriting, and then we'll hit the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be back. I think that's Clark Terry with Eddie Cleanhead Vincent and a bunch of other folks there on Vox Pop. I forget the name of that track. It's Marina Bay Rednecks, perhaps? That's right. It's an oldie. 800-348-2551 is our number. Dr. Yaron Sternbach is our guest. So before we get to the phones, we have a lot of calls, and we'll get to it. Does everybody walking around have an aneurysm, maybe small, and they don't know it?
No, absolutely not. Few people are walking around with aneurysms, and I think that it's important to indicate that particularly for aortic aneurysms and specifically abdominal aortic aneurysms, those are more common in males and actually for a number of years have been in the top 10 causes of death for males in the older population. So there's actually a mandate from Medicare to screen males at their first Medicare age exam for an aneurysm with an ultrasound. And, you know, you do pick up some that way.
Ultrasound. So CT scan, MRI, not needed. Ultrasound is enough to get this done.
Ultrasound is enough in the overwhelming majority of patients to get this done. And in normal-sized folks, a physical exam is a reasonable way to do it.
We're joined by Dr. Yaron Sternbach today of St. Peter's Vascular Associates. And let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551. We begin in Brattleboro, Vermont. Joyce, you're on. Go ahead.
My question is, I'm wondering how many of your colleagues are aware of the problem of viral infections in the blood vessel walls.
Okay.
So I think that's not something that a lot of people are aware of. I think there are bacterial and viral infections that can take hold of the blood vessels, and there's certainly vascular complications of viral infections in general. But that is a relatively, those are really relatively infrequent conditions, fortunately. They can be really devastating.
Joyce.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Medical Monday. Dr. Yaron Sternbach joins us. Let's go to Kingston and Rebecca. Rebecca, you're on.
Hi, I'm just wondering about sudden bruising with no explained cause. In particular, I had a day where I went, this is a time where maybe there was a clear cause. I went kayaking in an estuary and got hypothermia and almost didn't make it. The next week I had my entire quads were completely black and blue. Actually, one of them in particular was completely black and blue without having been bruised in any way. That was one strange incident. But since then, I'll wake up from sleep and there will just be like a big bruise looking thing on my, you know, collarbone or on my arm or wherever, which is definitely not caused by any kind of physical trauma. So I'm just curious how that relates and if there's anything I can do to get it checked out. I've mentioned it to doctors I have a lot of neurological issues, so I've mentioned it to them, and they're just kind of nonplussed and don't know where to send me. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for your question. You know, not all bruising is necessarily vascular, as it turns out. It's certainly something that should start out with your primary care physician. There may be some other underlying issues that are relevant to other specialties, and they can refer you appropriately, whether it's to hematology or to vascular or to other specialties.
Rebecca.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I'm wondering if I've gone through 8 million tests already and I haven't gone to a vascular specialist, what's the best place to start? I think hematology, I've had a lot of blood tests, every blood test you can imagine, not just for this, but for other things. But I'm curious, where would I go if I were looking into this with a vascular specialist?
Just so you know, we really don't want to recommend places or people, but in general, I think you could ask.
How would I start the search? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that starts with a frank conversation with your primary care physician in order to figure out what you'd like investigated. And they can also start the investigation themselves frequently, depending on what direction you're going in with that. So that's where I would go.
All right, Rebecca, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, and we'll check the email bag in a bit, but we're on a roll with the phones. Let's go to Gansvoort. We'll go to Martha. Martha, you're on with Dr. Yaron Sternbach.
Yes. I most recently had been to a neurologist, and they gave me they found a monoclonal protein in my blood, and since then I got a call that I should have a vascular ultrasound. And I have heard that monoclonal protein can also a possibility would be multiple myeloma, which my neighbor died of years back. He was right under a cell tower, and I'm close to the cell tower too.
Okay.
Hi, Martha. Thanks for your call. Listen, an ultrasound can be obtained by referral from your primary care physician. I'm sure there are probably multiple places.
Well, it may have been from her. But I wasn't sure whether it was the neurologist or the primary care. But what would they be looking for? I've been a vegetarian and now vegan for quite a while. My brother and sister both did die of ruptures of the veins in their heart. He started to dissect, and he was it was fixed, and then he came back, and then a few weeks later he had another one too,
mm-hmm.
that hadn't been fixed, but they didn't think it needed immediate attention. But my sister also died of a rupture of an aorta or something.
Okay.
Yeah, I wish I could tell you what they're looking for, but without knowing what blood vessel they suggest an ultrasound of, it's hard for me to guess at. But certainly something that you should ask them pointedly when they refer you for an ultrasound. I think they can give you a straight answer.
All right, Martha, thank you very much for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. Let's go to Jersey City already. And Stephanie. Stephanie, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a question about statins. And I heard that taking statins can reduce your strength in muscles as you grow older, and taking a supplement, I guess it's CoQ10, helps with reversing that muscle weaknesses. Have you heard anything like that where a supplement could be helpful in that way?
You know, we see patients on statins frequently, and also some of them are taking CoQ10. It's something that I would recommend you discuss with your cardiologist or whoever's managing your lipids. But in the vast majority of folks, statins are really well tolerated, and they do have a stabilizing effect on plaque. So people with atherosclerotic disease benefit from them.
Stephanie.
Right. I get that, but I'm wondering, I think they did some studies in Japan where that people in the United States suffer from muscle weakness as a result of statins, and studies done with Japanese populations found that them when they took the CoQ10, they didn't experience that sort of muscle weakening as a result of taking the statins.
And okay.
So I have been taking CoQ10, and I've forgotten why I'm taking it.
Me
I
too.
I came across this recently.
Yes, exactly. And I'd like to know what it is, first of all. And after you're off, Stephanie, I'm going to ask the doc just that. Do you know what CoQ10 is? What is it?
It's a supplement. It's not something that I ever prescribe for folks.
Okay.
And I would really...
I was told to take it for a month before I went on a statin.
Yeah, a lot of people have, but the vast majority of people don't, and so I'm not...
Okay.
I'm,
so you're not a proponent of the CoQ10?
I'm not a proponent. I'm not an opponent.
Okay. I mean, you know, it's pretty costly, but I'm cranking the stuff down, and I feel great. Let's go to Gary in Sunderland. You're on.
Hi. I've got a couple of questions regarding BB aspirin.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the more recently it's been suggested that we don't really need to take it, but I've got a particular situation. I know you can't advise specifically on medical issues. However, I've got contradicting medical recommendations.
All right.
So a couple of very quick background things. Some years ago, I had a torn Achilles tendon, and as a result of that, I ended up with some blood clots in my leg, which were associated with the injury and swelling associated with the injury. And it was recommended that I take the blood, baby aspirin. I never ended up having surgery, but there was a concern about it. And then sometime after that, I had a spleen venal aneurysm. And I had laparoscopic surgery, which is very cool, by the way. I was awake for it. And that vascular surgeon suggested that I take baby aspirin as well. A few years later, I called the vascular surgeon and said, should I still be taking the baby aspirin? Because, you know, I'm hearing that maybe it's not recommended anymore. And she said, yes. I asked my PCP, my regular primary care doctor, and he said, nah.
Huh, interesting.
So I know it's a broader topic than just my specific situation, so I'm interested to hear your comments, both on, in general, your recommendation.
Yeah.
And if you what your thoughts are, not asking for a recommendation specifically.
Understood.
What do you think about what's going on?
You know, Gary makes a great point. Years ago, 10, 15 or more years ago, anybody who is at risk of having any blood pressure issues or anything else, oh, take a baby aspirin. Now, suddenly, doctors are a little more reticent. Why?
Well, because it's turned out that in population-based studies, which we mentioned earlier, it's not all that protective, and it carries a bleeding risk. So in the case that Gary brings up, I don't hear anything that is an absolute indication to continue taking aspirin in general.
Okay? But not in a legally binding sense because you don't know his full...
Precisely.
Okay.
So in general, that's a thing. For the most part, we like to see patients on aspirin who have confirmed atherosclerotic disease, that is plaque in their arteries, and usually with significant risk factors for those diseases.
It's just a blood thinner, right? Basically?
Aspirin, it's a very mild blood thinner. It inactivates platelets and makes them less likely to stick to the plaque.
Okay. And to be clear, I've been taking the BB aspirin, but as of, like, for the past couple of years, I've actually been taking it very sporadically because I just was kind of like, well, I don't know if I should or I shouldn't, so I'll kind of hedge my bets. But thank you. That's kind of where I was going with it. The situation was very, very, that initially suggested it was very event specific. And other than that, I'm completely healthy. No arterial or blood problems, blood pressure, anything. So thank you.
Terrific. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. Dr. Yaron Sternbach joins us from St. Peter's Vascular Associates. Let's now go to Springfield, Massachusetts. Liz, you're on.
Hi there. Thank you so much for the show. I just wanted to stress how important it is to get checked for AAAs. I was actually at a cancer appointment with a vascular surgeon back in 2010, and my husband had actually gotten checked out by a cardiologist to be able to start running half marathons, but they never looked from his chest down. And we happened to be at a vascular surgeon's office. They were checking me, and my mom saw a sign on the wall that talked about aortic aneurysms, and she said, "Didn't your mom die from one of those?" And then they checked him out, and he had an 8-centimeter aortic aneurysm, AAA, that he got fixed, and we would never have known about it. So I really hope that people will get checked out for it, men and women, to be honest.
Liz, thanks a lot. Doc, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I'd love to. Liz, you bring up some great points. Most aneurysms are not familial in nature, but when you have first-degree relatives with an aortic aneurysm, it's important to check because there can be clusters within families, and a very poorly documented inheritance pattern. And again, the test is easy. Physical exam for thin, normal-sized people, ultrasounds, otherwise for the vast majority of people, sometimes a CT scan, but really easy way to make the diagnosis and very important in terms of saving people's lives. So good for you.
Liz, thanks for the call. So the genetic component is not that strong with these?
It's not that strong in general, but within certain families, there are clusters where it's very strong.
Why?
Not always well understood. There are some connective tissue disorders, which lead some folks to have tissues that weaken within the blood vessel wall that lead to aneurysms. But there are also plenty of familial clusters where they don't have those disorders.
We're joined today by Dr. Yaron Sternbach of St. Peter's Vascular Associates. The number here is 800-348-2551. Grab a couple of more calls before the next break, then we'll go to Sunderland, Massachusetts. Scott, you're on.
Oh, thank you for taking my call, and I always appreciate your work, Ray.
Thanks.
My wife and I have a 35-year-old son who 2 years ago had blockage by his, inferior vernal, just above his leg, returning toward the heart. The filter was put in, and that filter, when it was installed, had a slight angle, and the head is now buried in that vein. The current thinking is that will simply be monitored and left in because of its location. I know there's a lot of some specifics I'm missing, but are those devices meant for a lifetime's installation?
Great question, Scott. I think you're talking about inferior vena cava filters.
Bingo, that's the one.
I'm glad I got it.
Number one answer. Go ahead.
They're put in to prevent clots from lower extremities, from the legs, from migrating up towards the heart and lungs, right? And these days, most of them are put in temporarily, but they are all designed to stay in permanently. That is the short answer. The longer answer is that there are ways of taking out filters, even that are slightly askew, and that may be worthwhile looking into at some level for a 35-year-old otherwise healthy
Scott
guy.
Want to follow up, Scott?
Well, thanks so much for. They have they're monitoring pretty closely every 6 months to make sure I know two things: migration or puncturing of the vessel itself with that head. They tried to go in and get it into without really opening him up, and they were unable to do it. So.
Yeah, well, it sounds like he's being appropriately monitored. He's certainly have people that care about him. Yep.
Scott, thanks for the call. So you can go in and right the ship, as it were, and put this filter properly when it is askew.
sometimes.
Is that new? I mean, does robotics and micro technologies, have they become a game changer?
Yeah, so they have become a game changer in many ways. This is just one of them. So up until about 20 years ago, all these filters went in and they were left in. Then the manufacturers started devising new filters that we could essentially grasp and take out, which made complete sense from the standpoint of when the risk of blood clots traveling up towards the heart decreases. It's easiest to get these filters out early. So if you put them in for a specified period of time, you know that you schedule getting it out. The longer they're in there, the harder they are to potentially get out, particularly if they tip one way or another. There are still ways to do that. These some people end up with chronic pain as a result of the tines protruding through the vein wall and actually puncturing local organs. We've actually had some success relieving some of that discomfort and taking it out. In one particular elegant situation, I teamed up with one of the urologists, and we took out the filter initially, and a couple of broken pieces were left behind, and they went in robotically and got the remaining pieces, which were lying behind the IVC filter. So very, very cool stuff.
We're joined by Dr. Yaron Sternbach of St. Peter's Vascular Associates. Just quickly before the break, you talked about stents. And they're metal, right? They're titanium. What are they, titanium?
Most of them are nickel-titanium alloy of some type, yeah.
Is there any research into some sort of synthetic material that wouldn't be rejected by the body that can replace whole sections of veins or arteries?
Yeah, so there's actually been a lot of research over the last couple of decades looking at both synthetics of various types, biopolymers of various types. And the short answer is that so far we've fallen short of any specific biologic that can replace blood vessels completely. There are actually some that have been trialed in trauma within the military in those types of situations. And, you know, they've gotten good short-term results with them, but not longer-term results. Mm. One of the actually more interesting things is that there are now some biodegradable stents that are put in as polymers. They're much more limited in size and they have specific indications, but it's nice to have a stent go in. They actually can deliver drug from within the stent to the area that was treated, and within 6 months to a year, they're gone, completely absorbed by the body.
But some people need stents forever, right? That would not be a good solution if it dissolves.
Well, we don't know that everybody needs stents forever. Right now, the methods that we have that are most effective at opening up blood vessels that are blocked minimally invasively include stents that are made of various types of metal alloys. And, you know, they're there because they're effective and because they're not rejected by the body. All of us would much rather, you know, if we didn't need to have a foreign body in us forever,
right,
and still function equally well, right, we would rather have that. But that hasn't caught up with the metal stents yet.
All right, let's take a quick break. We're a couple of minutes overdue, but that's what happens when I get talking about stents. I just can't stop. Dr. Yaron Sternbach joins us from St. Peter's Vascular Associates. We'll be back. Doug Sertl, I believe that one is the old classic, I Hear a Rhapsody. Yes, yes. Vox Pop on WAMC. It's Medical Monday, and Dr. Yaron Sternbach joins us from St. Peter's Vascular Associates. The number is 800-348-2551, and the email is voxpop@wamc.org. Let's do a couple emails, and then we'll get back to the phones. Dennis, near Togatown, writes, I drink milk. I'd like to drink whole milk. is it safe? Whole milk as safe for cholesterol?
Listen, these are questions that demand individual answers. Whole milk is safe. Whole milk is not safe for everyone if they can have, or is not as safe for everyone as low-fat or skim milk if they need to control the amount of fat intake.
Okay, but you get a 2% milk. What's whole milk, 4%?
It is.
Well, that's going to make a difference?
It's that much more.
All right, fine. Wendy writes in, I'm 64, 220 pounds, 30% obese. I'm in relatively good health, good blood pressure. I had a varicose vein when I was pregnant. And I have one behind one of my knees. Now, I also have spider veins. Am I at risk, or do I need to get baseline information collected by a specialist? My platelets also need to be manually counted when I have surgery. Are these things a recipe to see a hematologist? One anesthesiologist asked me if I have ever seen one.
So varicose veins in general are common during pregnancy. Most of them recede after pregnancy. Those that linger can be treated if they bother you. The platelet issue is something that really probably needs a more detailed explanation, and a hematologist may not be a bad person to see in that regard.
All right, fair enough. This one's from G. I'm a 73-year-old male. My father died at age 60 from a AAA in 1968. I was checked for AAA about 8 years, ago, and was found to have the same condition, but not yet warranting surgery. Annual checks have found the aneurysm continues to shrink every year to the point that it is essentially non-existent. Is this possible or just unusual?
It would be highly unusual. Aneurysms don't usually shrink without having been treated. So,
what do you think's at play?
Well, different people doing different examinations. If it's by ultrasound, that may be a play. Otherwise, probably reasonable to get a CT scan, get a definitive assessment.
Have you ever heard of such a thing as an aneurysm sort of going away?
Only after we fix them.
Ah, okay. Dr. Yaron Sternbach joins us today from St. Peter's Vascular Associates. A couple more emails, and then we'll jump back to the phones. Currently, this is from Mark. How much is AI involved in vascular research and surgery? Second, do you see evidence of microplastic accumulation in the bloodstream?
So AI is actually taking an increasing role in terms of both research and certainly in terms of study interpretation. Many of the radiologic studies that are obtained now get an initial AI overview, and in some cases, they redirect the folks reading those studies in order to reassess them. So that's certainly a burgeoning field. Tell me the second question again. The microplastics.
Yeah, in the bloodstream.
Yeah, so obviously there's a huge concern about microplastics in general. We don't see them while we're working on a day-to-day basis, but it's not that we're not aware of the concerns about them.
All right, one more email for now, and then we'll jump back to the phones. This one's from Lynn. I'm wondering what the best method is to get rid of a venous lake on my lip. Initial inquiries with physicians have said that a laser therapy is the treatment most used. My dermatologist doesn't use any lasers. An initial inquiry with a vascular group said they don't use lasers. Some medical research papers online have spoken about sclerotherapy injections on the lip. I'm assuming this might be a fairly painful procedure compared to the laser therapy. Can you comment on it?
Yeah, so in general, for venous malformations on the lip or anywhere that crosses the vermilion border, the border between normal skin and the red part of the lip, I would see a plastic surgeon that specializes in facial plastic surgery.
All right, let's go back to our phone lines with Dr. Yaron Sternbach, 800-348-2551. To Matamoros, Pennsylvania, we go. Jim, you're on.
How far down the small vessels can you reach endoscopically?
How far in the legs, Jim? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, predominantly.
So with catheters, we can get beyond the ankle if we have to.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome, sir.
Thanks, Jim. Let's go to Mark in Bennington. Mark, you're on.
Yeah, hi, doctor. I have a calcium count of 1,360. I'm 6'1", 170 pounds. I do 4.5 to 6 hours of cardio climbing the mountain next to my house every day, every, you know, 3 times a week. Well, totally in a week, you know, 4 to 6 hours. And I do weight resistance training an hour twice a week as well. I did a stress test with my cardiologist, and he said it came out fine. But we're going to do another CT scan that supposedly it's some new machine at Southern Vermont Medical Center. And I'm just curious, they said that because of the calcium count, that it may not be able to see into the veins as much as it would if that was not the case, because it reflects, I guess, and doesn't allow the scan to see into the veins. Does that sound like it makes sense?
Yeah, so I think they're talking about a CT angiogram, and they're looking at your coronary arteries, okay?
Yeah, that's the contrast.
Yeah, so listen, you're doing many of the right things for your health, and that's wonderful. The calcium score is something that you're saddled with, in part likely because of some genetics, and all it is a marker for, you know, cardiac event risk and atherosclerosis elsewhere. So if they want you to have that study, you know, I think it's probably a reasonable thing to do, although, you know, the contrast with calcium sometimes can be a little bit challenging to interpret, and I think that's what they're talking about.
Mark, thanks a lot for the call. To Gilderland we go, and it's Dan. Dan, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is regarding calling actually for my sister, who was just diagnosed with median arcuate ligament syndrome. And my understanding, it's a relatively rare condition. And I'm wondering if the doctor has had any experience with this condition and if he could recommend any treatment options.
Okay, Doc.
Yeah, so thanks for bringing this up. It's an interesting topic because there are a bunch of different compression syndromes in general within the body, but median arcuate ligament syndrome is most often just something diagnosed by radiologists when they do a study and they see certain findings. That doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, it's a full-fledged syndrome with all the symptoms that go along with it. There are a variety of different potential treatments, but the vast majority of people don't need any treatment at all. I'd encourage her to consult with her physician regarding further evaluation.
Dan, thank you very much. Dr. Yaron Sternbach joins us from St. Peter's Vascular Associates, and let's go to Monroe and Fritz. Fritz, you're on.
Good afternoon. Several questions. So I had six-way bypass surgery 4 years ago, and three of the bypasses failed, and they ended up going and putting a stent in. And so the couple questions. One, what percentage of that, it was discussed that what percentage of that happened where the bypasses actually fail? I was told that the physiology of my particular vessels were such that it was higher likelihood of failure. And the second question is the atorvastatin that I'm on now, and I'm on max dosage now. And would you foresee that I would be on that maximum dosage for the rest of my life? That's my question.
Okay.
Thanks.
You got it.
So it's hard to comment on the outcome of your bypasses without knowing and seeing a lot more about the anatomy. So I'm going to have to pass on that. The question regarding the statins is an important one. Most people with significant disease, the cardiologists and lipid specialists like to see you on a highest dose that you will tolerate. Sometimes they look at other tests and determine whether or not you need to be on a secondary anti-lipid medication as well, and I'd encourage you to discuss that with your cardiologist.
Fritz, thank you very much. To Clifton Park and Valerie. Hello, Valerie, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thank you so much for the show, and thank you, doctor, for taking all of our questions. My question is, I am a recent breast cancer survivor, but I'm finished my treatments and now I'm on medication. I did have lymph node removed, but my question is because my mom has had phlebitis her entire life. It's in her family. Her cousins have had it. She had issues with, during pregnancies and had to wear support stockings. And she's also about 10 years ago when she was about 75 had a lung clot. So I'm concerned because I had lymph node removed. I don't know if it's all connected. I'm sure it's all connected, but should I be getting tested for any of this just to ensure that I don't have circulation issues, especially because I also have this. And I also was genetically tested and tested positive for a gene mutation called PMS2, which predisposes me to endometrial as well as colon cancer, which is my cousin was recently recovered from a couple years ago.
All right.
So first of all, congratulations on having completed your treatment. It's great news, wonderful news.
Thank you.
Regarding your question about being screened for phlebitis, if you don't have any symptoms at this point, it's not clear that there's any indication to it. You've gotten through a very high-risk period having cancer. However, with a first-degree relative who's had blood clots, such as your mom, I think, is mm-hmm. You said, there's certainly some awareness correct. That your oncologist who has treated you would have had about that. So it's a question for them is, hey, do I need okay. to be screened additionally, any additional testing that needs to be done? And if so, which ones and what do I do about it? But great questions.
Valerie, thanks a lot. All right, we only have 2 minutes here. This is a long question. Came in from Shannon. I'm going to try.
Okay.
We may not have time.
Let's see
what happens. All right, here we go. 52-year-old former competitive athlete. Thank you for the show. I do have connective tissue disorder and have recently undergone several rounds of neurosurgery. One of these surgeries decompressed my intracranial jugular vein. And yes, you can imagine that was quite a problem prior to decompression. Because of the connective tissue disorder, I have hypoadrenergic POTS, which is sometimes referred to as vascular insufficiency. The hospital vascular center confirmed this to me when I displayed blood pooling and Raynaud's simultaneously. I have noticed that post-surgery to decompress the intracranial jugular vein, my blood pooling has gotten much worse. I've been wearing compression garments for years. I was a very, very active individual. Are you aware of this type of blood pooling, stenosis of the feet, reversing once it becomes escalated post-bacterial or viral infection, surgery, or other physical trauma? Thanks very much. I'm quite uncomfortable at the end of the day. I do not have Marfan's, do not have the vascular genetic component of my connective tissue disorder. That's from Shannon. Okay, we got about a minute. What do you got?
Yeah, I don't have a lot because I would need to know so much more about the specifics of this case. So, it's one of these things that unfortunately, as frustrated as she sounds, I think we're going to have to defer, because of a lack of, adequate information, testing,
all right,
examination.
Yeah. One of the things in my line of work is I often have to read things I have no idea what I'm reading. And that was one of the classic cases right there. All right, we're almost done, Dr. Yaron Sternbach. I'm sure there are things I did not cover. But let me ask you this. How can you tell if you're just walking around, regular guy, how do you tell if you have an aneurysm cooking?
Just walking around, you can't, right? That's the reason to get checked. That's the most important takeaway lesson. There's some things in vascular disease that you will know about. If you're having trouble walking because your legs hurt, you may have some vascular insufficiency in your legs, but you may not know that you have a narrowing in your carotid artery. You may not know that you have an aneurysm or a narrowing to your kidney artery. These are things that one can ask physicians about when appropriate.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, you have been a great guest, Dr. Yaron Sternbach. Thanks for being on the show. It was pretty fast, right?
It was. It flew.
Support comes from Prestwick Chase Independent Living Community, offering social, cultural, and educational activities amid 120 acres of natural woodscape in historic Saratoga Springs, PrestwickChase.com. Well, that's it. Thanks to everybody who threw a question our way today, everybody on the email and the phones. Thanks to Dr. Yaron Sternbach again of St. Peter's Vascular Associates for being here. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Well done, sir. Ed Rosen, who's already out of the building. I was very, boy, I'll tell you what, he wanted to get out. He took the calls today. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Boyd's with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.